welcome to Tales from the Fog. I'm your host, Casey, and with me once again is the amazing and wonderful Veronica. How are you doing today?
Good evening.
So you're doing good?
Oh, yeah. I'm great. I was going for, you know, Alfred Hitchcock.
Sure.
Good evening. How's that? Was that better?
Yeah,
I'm sure. Bellow it out. Good evening. How's that?
That better.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Doing pretty good. Cruising through life. Yeah. Having a good time. Doing lots of pull-ups and lots of handstands. Other than that, not much to report. How about you, sir?
I'm doing good.
Excellent.
It's fun, you know, being home, not having to work.
Welcome to the club. Yeah, so those of you who may not be in the loop, Casey joined the I Got Handed a Box club, and now he's home every day.
As did the rest of the company, so it's not terrible, but...
Well, it is terrible. It sucks that all of that work and all of that pushing and fighting and all of those long hours, fighting for more business, schmoozing all those new clients, everything, all of it is for naught. I mean, I don't think it's for naught. I think that there's a lot of experience to be taken to the next, whatever the next chapter is for everybody, but it does kind of suck to see all of that work just dissolve.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of is what happens, though. So when you have a smaller company who gets picked up by a bigger company, one of two things happens. Either they try to support that company and grow it, or they tear it apart for assets that they can then sell off and make more money. So they stuck with us for a while, and then now they kind of tore us apart, and they're going to start selling off all our assets.
I wish I knew a little bit more about that business, because there was such a push. When we first started the podcast, I was working in the sales department, I believe.
Yeah.
I think I was already in sales.
Yeah, I think you were in sales, yeah.
And I was working – I wasn't working the craziest hours out of everybody in the sales department, but I was putting in some stupid hours sometimes. And we fought so hard, and we – like the volume that they pushed. I mean, we were hiring constantly, and we were buying deals like crazy, and – and then suddenly someone slammed on the brakes. And was like, oh, just kidding. Don't buy as much as we – and because we were starting to buy crappy deals. And so we were getting these non-profitable, highly volatile, you know, it's auto lending. So this is probably all gibberish. But basically we got some like bad debt and, you know, lesser quality deals. And it ended up kind of biting us in the butt. We also took a big chance there are a lot of like high volume dealers. If you have an AutoNation, if you've ever been driving and you see that little pink license plate, that's AutoNation, and they're huge. And we were trying to kiss ass to get a whole bunch of AutoNation deals, but they were only sending us what they call A paper, which is like super high FICO scores. They're probably not going to keep the car very long. They like getting new cars, yada, yada. They've got money. Problem is, people with really good credit don't pay high APRs. So the bank that has that deal doesn't make a lot of money. Yep. So we're buying just tons of these deals and not making any money. Mm-hmm. Along with the crappy deals that we had to buy just to match volume means we've got no profit paper and paper that's not paying their bills.
Probably going to repo.
That's going to repo. So like we – like – and maybe that has nothing to do with why they closed the company. I don't know. I'm not, you know, in the back end finance part of it. But – that was my thought, was that may have been what shot us in the foot. But also, the tides shifted when the political climate shifted.
Yeah, the auto sector recently, we'll say, has taken a huge nosedive in sales across the board. So it's not just our company. Like, every company is struggling.
Yeah.
From what I was able to gather from the information that I had is our major bank, which is that owned us, was TCF, which is a – nobody knows about it in California. But Midwest to back east, it's a huge bank. I mean, the Minnesota Vikings play in TCF Stadium. So, I mean, they're a gigantic bank. They're one of the oldest banking institutions in America. They've been around since like the early 1800s or something like that. And they've survived that long because they've been really good at predicting recessions. And when they predict a recession, they sell off liabilities, like our company. Mm-hmm. We had a big liability of all these deals that are probably going to foreclose, or you know, it's people that, especially in a recession, if we have all these bad deals, they're going to repo, because usually people with lower income jobs get shifted quickly in the mm-hmm. in a recession.
On top of that, deals don't make money until you've had them on the books for over a certain amount of time. Yeah. There was that huge rush of buy everything. You're in the red up till a certain point because of all the overhead costs to
manage that loan. Yeah, you have to wait to recoup that money.
So you're talking about it's a liability.
But then, yeah, so they got to get rid of all the liability. But then what they're doing is they're taking the money from selling off all that stuff and they're buying back TCF stocks. They're buying stock away from people so that they have a stronger control hold over the bank. And that way they have a more power in a recession to decide how to allocate their funds to different departments. To me, that just means they're predicting a recession soon.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Like, what, based on what you've seeing this happen before, and being in mortgage and been home mortgage at the time, seeing something like this happen, like, How do you foresee this happening as far as what TCF is doing now?
Based on their actions and the actions of some other banks that I've been following online, based on previous, you know, I've been in the finance industry for a long time, so I would say it's 2 years max before a big recession.
That fast? I mean, yeah. We just had that one in 07, 07 and 08.
Yeah. But it's about every 10 years. 2017.
Yep. We're right on time.
It may not be as big because lenders haven't really loosened the purse strings on mortgages and loans. Like, it's still pretty hard to get a mortgage. So I don't think we're in as deep as we were when the 07 one crashed. So I don't think it'll be as bad. But I think it's going to happen.
That's just
2 years max. We're going to hit it and the stock market's going to drop.
Right now, the stock market is soaring.
Yeah.
I mean, the value, I was listening to, I don't know, some radio station, AM 640, and they were saying that the stock market was the highest, like, all-time highs. Just ridiculous. And then I'm thinking, like, why? Like, where is this money coming from where people are putting it in there? Like, where was it before? Who's the one buying?
The stock market's all about perceived value, right? So yeah. It's not... It's predicting the value of companies. So if you're good at predicting stuff, you can do good in the stock market. But
doesn't that money have to go from somewhere else to end up there? Like, where's that money coming from? Was it just not in the stock market before? Was it not invested in those companies?
Well, a lot of that stuff, again, it's perceived value. So it's not money going into the stock market. It's companies releasing stocks, which people can buy, right? So these companies are saying, hey, we're worth an extra 30 million, so here's another 30,000 shares or whatever mm-hmm. that we're going to drop on the market, and then
people can buy them.
And, you know, it's the stock market's weird, but
I'm not even going to pretend to understand
that. Yeah.
But
so anyway, let's talk about fun stuff.
Yeah.
Not boring, stupid stuff. Like, it recessions is, and crap.
But I know. But, like, we're haunters by nature. And when you're a haunter, you have to own a business and you have to run a business. So the financial climate does impact what we do. So that's why it's interesting.
But here's an interesting thing. Is when there's a severe recession, money spent on entertainment goes up.
It does.
Not Scary Farm. And Universal, Halloween Horror Nights, and even smaller independent haunts had some of their biggest years in like 08 and 09 when we were in the depths of the recession because people want to get away from their crappy life. You know, they're like, everything sucks. Let's go do something fun.
It's true.
So, you know, it's
– Yeah. But as a haunter, like if you – like most haunters, I'm going to guess, have a day job and they do their home haunt – alongside their daily lives.
Yeah.
When that daily life funds your haunt and suddenly you don't have that job anymore, you know, that affects if you're going to be able to do a haunt and the quality of it.
Yeah.
So it does impact the market, the, you know, the Haunter's Market, oh, you know, in its own way, more on the front end. But it, you know, if you can still pull it off, it pays for itself in the back end.
Yeah.
If you can stick it through. Anyway, what were we talking about?
Well, okay, let's start off with saying that today we're drinking a new brew from New Belgium. It's a limited release called Cellar Blender. And it's a sour ale. So if you like Sour Patch Kids candy.
God, it's so good.
It has a bite. It tastes, you know, it has that same feeling going down.
It's like apple ale mixed with a Sour Patch Kid like type of bite.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So it's, I don't know if it's supposed to be apple-y, but it has
an apple-y.
It does a little bit. Like, taste, but it's not like a cider. It tastes like an apple ale, but it is bitey and it is refreshing and delicious.
Mm-hmm. So if you like sour ales, you know, check it out. It's good.
We got it at Walmart of all places. Yeah. So get while the getting's good if it's in your market.
Fun thing, Antho, our friend Anthony from Scary Farm, he sent me a video, and I'm gonna play it on the podcast, the audio of it anyway, because I love when Scary Farm ends up on like pop culture. It's always interesting when like Scary Farm pops up in just weird random places. So I'm assuming it was last night on Fox. There's a show called Ghosted, and it actually connects to what else we're going to talk about today, because one of the lead characters was also a lead character in the thing that we're going to talk about tonight.
Hey, cool.
So he's on this show, and they have not Scary Farm pops up. So you can, I'm going to play the audio for you guys now so you can hear it.
Corpse came back to haunt the living.
Okay, but like, do people really come here wanting to poop their pants?
Alan loved it. So did I. It's a total rush.
Look, man, I don't need a backstory. I performed 7 years at Not Scary Farm.
No way, you're cancer?
99-06 golden years. But I want to do something really big here, you know, like that viral.
The golden years.
So it got me thinking, is 99-06 really the golden years of Scary Farm?
I would actually argue yes.
You think?
Because there was a shift that they talked about back then. That was the shift from the old school to the new school. And it was right when I was rolling in around 2003,
mm-hmm.
was the shift from this old school mentality, which was the monster is infallible. It was a very reminiscent of like the 70s and 80s style monster with like just the aesthetic and the monster, the scare tactic, the relatively rudimentary sliding. Like it was very, it had its own aesthetic. And then things started to shift into a little bit more, you know, athletic, more, way more creative as far as costuming and character and everything like that. It did start to shift in the early 2000s. So then the era that he's talking about, there was some of that old school and the new school together, and it was, I mean, it was amazing because you had veterans and you had people who had been doing this for, you know, decades, were still there and they were holding down the fort and they were not going to let that history die. And then you also had these wickedly talented, you know, energetic, creative new monsters that were in the mix as well. And this, it wasn't a throwaway job. It wasn't something where, like, you know, kids nowadays, they work a year or two and then they're gone. Like, there was still that dedication of you are in it for life. Like, once a monster, always a monster. And that was in that era as well. So when he said that, I mean, I thought it was kind of funny that it was actually years that I was there, which seems like eons ago. But, like, it kind of rings true. Like when I think of Scary Farm, I actually do think of the late 90s to early 2000s because mm-hmm. That's when I was attending as a guest. That's how I remember it the first time that I saw it.
Yeah.
And to me, yes, it is the golden years.
That's funny. I don't know. Like for me, I think there's like pockets of golden years.
Like what?
So there was like a time, gosh, I would probably say it was like 89 to 93, that was really awesome. And then like 93 to like 99, there was kind of like a lull where things kind of got stagnant a little bit. as far as like the mazes go. But those earlier years, the log ride and mine ride just kicked ass. And like they slowly started taking away the emphasis on those, because those were the things you, like the two things you went to haunt to do. You had to go on the log ride, you had to go on the mine ride, and the haunted shack. Like those three things, you know, were like the shit. And then like everything else is like, if we get to it, we get to it. And they slowly started shifting away from the log ride and the mine ride. And then we lost the, you know, we lost the haunted shack. And I think that's kind of like when a real lull started. And now I think they're kind of building back steam, back to a new golden era. So I think there's probably been about three, but I think that was the 99 to 07 era is a golden year or a set of golden years in Haunt's history.
One could say that Haunt goes through its own recessions.
Yeah, you could say that.
See, it all ties together.
It does.
Yeah, so that was so funny. I love seeing, like, because when you're a monster, while it is your whole life, it's still something that you feel is so purely unique to you.
Yeah.
You forget that it, like, others have done it way before you and will continue to do it after you're done. But, like, it's just this weird, odd, precious thing. And to see it in such a random place, like, seeing it on TV, you're like, wait, what, what?
Yeah.
It was, I mean, in a weird way, it's reminiscent to the first time I heard that Red Hot Chili Peppers song singing about the belly dancers.
Yeah.
And I was like, how does he know about belly dancers? Like, they hadn't existed for, you know, hundreds of years before I even learned
what belly. Thousands of
years. Right? So, I mean, the goldfish bowl is so tiny and precious to me, and I just swim around, and every time I go around, it's a whole new world. But
a whole new world.
But it was the same kind of thing. It was like, hey, like part of something that's really precious to me is also really precious to somebody, to some writer or to that actor who ad-libbed it. We don't know. But like it's cool to see it somewhere else.
Yeah.
So thank you, Antho. That was really cool.
Yeah, that was fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually ties in because I don't remember his name. Do you remember his name?
The actor who played one of the stepdads?
Yeah.
No.
Hold on, I'm going to look it up really quick.
Okay.
So today we are going to talk about a movie that came out this year called Little Evil. And it's currently out on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And let's see. Is it Gary? Adam Scott is his name. So crazy, we found this movie. Like, I found it a couple weeks ago, and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. I want to watch it. So it's a horror comedy. And then we started watching. We're like, holy crap, like, everybody is in this movie. Like, how did we not find out about this movie, you know, earlier? Like, you know, it's kind of like one of those movies, like when they announced they were going to film it, we should have heard about it.
Because
check out this cast. So it has Evangeline
Lilly. She was in Lost.
She was in Lost. Clancy Brown, who's Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob.
And so many others.
Adam Scott, who's in Ghosted. Sally Field,
who's in everything.
Bridget Everett, who is in a lot of stuff. Donald Faison. Chris D'Elia,
We knew him from watching At Midnight.
At Midnight, he's a stand-up comedian. Like, there's just, like, so many people in this
movie. Every time, and a lot of them that may not even have been, like, listed in the credits that we saw were familiar faces. So they just, like friends calling friends were like, come be in this movie.
Yeah, it was so cool.
It was fun to
see. And Sally Field's character is great because she starts off playing somebody that you're like, yeah, that's a Sally Field character. But by the end of the thing, you're like, holy crap, I can't believe she's playing that character.
So are we going to, like, spoilers?
What do you want to do? Do you want to do spoilers?
Sometimes it's hard to talk about a movie and try to keep in mind that spoilers are an issue.
Yeah.
So let's just say...
Let's start off without spoilers, and then we'll tell everybody when we're going to go into spoilers.
I will try to adhere to that.
All right. So starting out, we'll just give you the backstory of this movie. The story is this guy who's marries this girl, and she has a son. So it's like, you know, now it's his stepson. And he thinks that his stepson is evil, which is hence the name Little Evil. And if you like Shaun of the Dead, I got to say that this movie is very Shaun of the Dead-esque. Mm-hmm. And there are some parts that are freaking hilarious.
Very well edited.
And it kind of ends up going in a direction I didn't really think it was going to go. Because we went in this not knowing anything.
Yeah.
And from the start of it, you're like, oh, okay, creepy kid movie. But then it kind of goes in a totally different direction.
It does. There's, at first, you are emotionally distant from the child. But then as it progresses, your emotions towards the characters shifts a bit. And I was not expecting that shift. Like, I anticipated the child being, like, the main antagonist. And it turns out that, you know, he isn't. And
spoilers!
I don't think that is, because there's a lot of ways that he could change. So there's more to the story than you think when you get started. We'll just say that. I don't think that's a spoiler.
I would think it kind of is.
Well, I would... maybe. All right. Well, sorry. I told you I would try. Spoiler
started 5 minutes ago, so let's just go into
that
it.
That wasn't 5 minutes. That was like a minute and a half. Anyway, I told you I would try.
That didn't last very long.
But I did try. Yoda wouldn't approve, but you're more forgiving. Anyway, so now that that's done, we've whipped off the Band-Aid, we can talk about the movie and, like, its full glory. So, the timing of it is great. It's funny. It's scary. Like, there's plenty of suspense and, you know, those well-timed audio cues and everything like that. Like, it's full of those, but it turns into this really endearing story where suddenly, like, you're feeling for the character that at first you were like, like the child, just the title of it, you're like, oh, it must be like another, like, he's Damien. He's, yeah, you know, the bad seed. He's this, you know, the horrible child, and you have to, like, do away with the horrible child. But then it isn't like that at all. And he's, you know, poor kid is just kind of like inadvertently caught in the middle,
yep,
of a much, much bigger fight. And when, of course, whenever I see Clancy Brown on TV, like, I get super excited because I only know him as a voice actor. I mean, I know he's an on-camera actor, but because I know him dominantly from voice acting, when I see his face, I get super excited. Yeah. So I'm like, yay, Mr. Krabs is in this. Because I'm sure of all the things he's done, he wants to be remembered as freaking Mr. Krabs.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's in the zeitgeist in that fashion. But a lot of faces were like, oh, my God, so-and-so's in this. Hey, so-and-so's in this.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Since I'm just going to be spoilers all over the place, what are your thoughts?
I liked it.
How's concise. That? Concise and to the point.
No, it was really cool. I liked that it totally subverted where you thought it was going, which is hard to do nowadays. And especially with a horror comedy, like, you kind of have a preconceived idea of what's going to happen. And actually, I wouldn't even... It's hard to say, like, there were a lot of funny moments and there's a lot of comedians in there. And all their characters were great. Like, I got to say, like, I loved everybody's character.
I sensed a lot of improv.
Yeah, you could tell that there was a lot of stuff that was improv. The main... All right, so he ends up having to go to therapy for stepdads to basically learn how to deal with their stepkids. Because, you know, if you don't have kids on your own and you end up in this, all of a sudden you have a kid, it's like a weird transition. So he ends up having to go to therapy, and that's where he meets, like, the Donald Faison character and Chris D'Elia and everybody. And, like, his main stepdad friend is this awesome lesbian character who is also his coworker, and she's flipping amazing. And I was so happy to see, like, a character like that so prominently in a film that you weren't expecting it at all.
Because everyone knows somebody like this or has met someone like this.
Yeah.
And, like, that actress is such a strong character actor. And she took this role and just she ran with it.
Yeah, she ran with it. And then, like, the payoff at the end, I'm not going to say what the payoff is, but she drops little hints, like, throughout. And then when you see the payoff, you're like, holy shit, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
I'm not going to spoil that one. That's just too fun.
There's just lots of little gifts in that movie.
Every time, like, all the quote-unquote stepdads are together, like, there's always silliness ensues. And there's a lot of, funny one-liners and things. But it's interesting because it rides this really awesome line, which Shaun of the Dead also did, of being able to be scary and suspenseful, but also freaking hilarious.
And endearing.
Yeah.
You relate to the characters.
And yeah, and you end up caring for, like, all these characters when at first there's a lot of them where you're like, what the fuck?
And it's awesome because the way that it asks you to suspend disbelief, you're not really fighting to do that. Like, you're willing to...
You kind of get slipped into it.
Yeah, like, some of it is just absurd, but in that universe, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And in their history, it makes sense, and you just let it happen. But it's fun to go down that road, and I like that there's a movie that doesn't take itself too seriously, but at the same time is very well done, story-wise and you know, with the characters, how all the actors developed them and everything. Like, it's just such a surprisingly really fun, awesome movie that I have never even heard of before. I mean, not like I've got my ear to the ground when it comes to cinema. As much as I love movie making, I don't watch enough films to know what's going on.
But this one, like, completely slipped under the radar, like, as far as I know. Like, I haven't seen anybody talking about it.
But there might be a lot of that as, you know,
and
the internet.
It's a Netflix-only
thing.
So, like, unless you have Netflix and unless you happen upon it in your feed that they feed you of things that they think you're going to like, you might not find it.
It makes me wonder how many, you know, I mean, it's good for actors and for, you know, anyone who works in film and TV because there's jobs galore.
Yeah.
But at the same time, all of that content, it makes me wonder how much of it is getting lost because there is so much content being created. And it's great that it's jobs and it's, you know, it's work. But at the same time, like, there's so much that goes unnoticed.
Yeah.
And maybe because it's not any good. Maybe it's content for the sake of content. Or maybe it's amazing, but we just don't see
it
because...
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the really cool stuff we just kind of stumble upon.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't heard anybody talking about this, but let's just check it out and see. And then you're like, oh my God, it's so good.
Roll the dice. Like, maybe that's just the nature of how things are discovered now.
Yeah. But you know what I would like to see? And I don't know how they could do this, but I would like to see a sequel where it's all the stepdads on a road trip.
Like a road trip
movie. It could be with the kids, but just the stepdads characters, like all of them together. I could just see an epic movie out of that. Like, those characters are just so good. And like, even like the Donald Faison character and the Chris D'Elia character, they're not in the movie a lot. But when they're there, you're like, you're kind of glad that they're there. Like,
you can't take your eyes off them.
Like, they just do, like, those characters are so good and so developed for being on screen for such a small amount of time that I almost feel like maybe there was more stuff. Maybe they were in the movie more and they ended up cutting it in a way that they weren't. I don't know, but like.
Or maybe they're just fantastic actors and know how to write a really good pre-story.
Yeah, that could be. But I would just absolutely love to see some kind of road trip movie with those guys just getting in silly antics, because it'd be great.
I agree. I would definitely watch that. So as we're watching this movie, and so a little insight into the Tales from the Fog hosts that you're listening to now, Casey and I met when my son from a previous marriage was two.
One.
He was one and some change.
Yeah, he's like
one
about
and a half
to turn two in like a couple months.
Yeah. And Casey did not, you know, he didn't have any kids from any previous marriages. So
thank God.
So Casey came in pretty early in Xander's life, but as a stepdad. And
yes.
But, you know, Xander.
Which is probably why I also found this movie hilarious, because there's so much stuff that they run into that's like, holy shit.
There's little things that they say that, like. you kind of have to have been there. But like, if you're a stepdad or you've been able to watch a stepdad be a stepdad, you see these hints and it's just hilarious in its own special way. But it's hilarity by familiarity, yeah. You know, like what The Hanging based itself on, like you're laughing because it's familiar to you.
Yeah.
Not this year, but years past. But this movie had a lot of that where you laugh because you got it. It spoke to something that means a lot to you.
But I think that could be said for a lot of just new parents in general as well. Like if you have a kid, I think there's a lot of stuff that would be like especially like the mom's perspective, I think.
Oh, big time.
Definitely a mom's perspective.
Yes. I mean, it was at least I hope it was in a you know, more magnified way.
It seems like it was elevated a bit. But
just
yeah.
A little, but I'm sure. I mean, some of the things that she would say to defend her son, I'm like, oh, I've been there.
I think the thing is it's written from the perspective of a stepdad. So, like, when stuff like that happens, and let's say, like, a mom is defending something that her kid is doing, in the other, the person that eyes, it's magnified, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's purposely written that way to reflect that.
Yeah, and it does, because when you're the mom and you're defending the child, you know both perspectives, but because like biologically or for whatever reason, you're like programmed to protect the child.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do. And you're just like, well, I have to honor that. So, you know, and you will. And it's this really weird thing. And like, if I were to step outside myself, I'm sure that logically I would be able to see this and handle it in a different fashion.
Yeah.
But that's not how it works in real life. And even though your child may be acting like the freaking Antichrist, you're going to defend it because that's your child. And you're allowing yourself to see the child's perspective over the perspective of someone who, quote unquote, just walked in, right?
Yeah.
So like from both of our perspectives, from Casey's and from mine, like we see so much of this, like, of course, in a more like exaggerated fashion, but like this is art imitating life.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of moments where we're just like, oh my God, I've been there. So that made it an extra level of endearing for us.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, Xander is, I mean, I rolled the dice and got really lucky with him. Like, for the most part, he's easygoing. You know, he doesn't raise hell. He doesn't try to kill anybody. Like, he's a really relaxed and groovy kid for the most part.
Yeah.
He can be Grumposaurus sometimes, but, you know, like, we're pretty lucky as far as kids go. He's okay. And there's only one of them.
That's true.
Which is great. But, you know, at the same time, he's also a normal human boy who does normal human boy stuff, which sometimes sucks. And we have to deal with that. And the way that that's handled was pretty well illustrated in this adorable movie. Yeah. So definitely high marks on this cute movie.
Yeah. And I think it was great the way that they slowly transitioned you into... Because, I mean, so it starts off by, like, as this weird movie, and then it kind of, like, gets freaky. Then it gets really weird. But then by the end of it, it's almost like an enduring family drama where, like, by the end, you're just, like, so happy. And you're like, how did that happen? Like, they went from this dark shit, and now it's like... Oh, it's so sweet.
It was really a roller coaster. Yeah, it starts off like a horror film.
Yeah. I mean, the opening scene in itself, you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I mean, it does show its cards a little early.
Yeah.
But
I think that's why it was so easy to get you not to know where it was going. Because it laid all its cards out on the table and you're like, oh, okay, this is where it's going. And then it goes in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wait, what? This isn't what I thought I was getting into.
So basically in the plot, there's like the W or whatever. There's the progression of the story. Like it starts here and then, you know, the shit hits the fan. It gets a little bit better. The shit hits the fan again. And then you end on the high note. It's like the W. So this film kind of does that, but it shows its cards still in the first act. So like... It has a scene that plays and then it goes to 1 week earlier and it tells the story as to why that scene happened. But it's it has this like horror movie kind of thing, and it is lighthearted. Like, it's shot in a way where it's not traditional horror movie lighting. It is a little bit more light.
But there is a few things that happen. And then there's also little tidbits of things, like the Shining Girls. There's like a little moment where it's like...
It's a very self-aware flick. Yeah,
like there's like this little moment with the Shining Girls, and you're just like, that's weird. And then it's like turned into something totally different. But
yeah, and they're like, hey, kids, come on. And they just like scurry off.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, but there's like, yeah, there's like just these cool little... And the one scene, it's from a movie, but there's a scene where he's walking down the hall and like the camera pans really far backwards away from him, and it's like kind of like this vertigo effect in the hallway.
Where it makes the hallway appear to stretch.
Yeah, and it's from is an Alfred Hitchcock movie.
They've used that technique a lot. It's like they pull the focus, but they move the camera at the same time, so it increases the depth of field while keeping the subject in focus. Mm-hmm. That's been in a lot of movies. Yeah.
And so there's like cool little like tropes thrown, you know, around and stuff. That's pretty cool.
And then the snow on the TV.
Yeah.
With the
Exorcist.
Yeah, there's Exorcist. Yeah. There was the what was the one with the little girl or at the
Amityville? Is it Amityville?
I don't remember.
I don't know, but there's a lot of little throwbacks to horror movies in there, which is fun.
Yeah. Again, it's that, you know, that familiarity.
But then every single time they kind of – it's a trope, but then they kind of use it to take the story in a different direction.
And they even use some more stuff from The Shining. Actually, thinking about it, there's a few tidbits from The Shining that they threw in there because they've got the words that are written in reverse. Yeah. You've got the two little girls and – actually, now that I think about it, that might be it. Maybe there's more.
There might be more.
But there's a lot of fun, lighthearted pulls that remind you that this is a scary movie, but it's a lighthearted scary movie and a very self-aware movie. So it doesn't at any point take itself seriously. But at the same time, the acting in it is all just pure. I mean, they're playing
it straight. Really, so like good. They're playing their characters like no one is like, I don't even know how to describe it. They're playing it like it's within the realm of the universe. All this shit is real.
And oh, yeah.
They're playing it very straight. There's no one that like is like wink, wink.
No one's campy. Yeah. There's no like breaking the fourth wall. There's no like that super hyper realistic anybody. It was just these are people from life.
Yes.
And again, that's a Shaun of the Dead-esque as well, where it's just very like pulled from life.
Yep.
So yeah, that was a fun movie. And I definitely, the journey that it takes you on, I almost was reluctant to embrace the child because I had closed that wall, that emotional wall, like he's a bad guy. And because I have a son, and this son is supposedly evil, I assumed that he was going to die or he was going to turn into this horrible monster or something. So I had already emotionally protected myself from him. Mm-hmm. And then he starts to soften. And I was like, I'm not ready. Like, I can't do this. Suddenly that he's smiling.
That was done so good. So there's a scene. Well, we're spoiling it.
Right, we spoiled the shit out of it already.
So it's the first time that the stepdad is spending time alone with the stepson, right? And that scene plays out so good because it's so realistic because it's like neither of them know what to do. Mm-hmm. But then by the end of it, they're like best friends.
They really connect. And it has nothing to do with that opening scene or like all the horrible things that happened that the child did to the stepdad.
Yeah.
Like all of it is gone. And they're just two people.
Yeah.
Just like trying, you know, trying to get along. Like all of that weird evil nonsense is just gone for this moment. And you see this connection between the two of them. And it is so sweet.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a little boy. That's just a sweet little kid.
Yeah.
And that's a dad who's just trying his ass off, you know, to dad.
Yeah.
So sweet.
But I thought that was funny. Like just the... when they both So they go into like a water park, right? So they both get to the water park, and then they're both just like standing there, like completely quiet. Like, what do we do now? We're here. We're doing the thing.
And like, so slides. But it's so sweet that they both. What's interesting is they both let their guard down.
Yeah.
They consciously relax. And as the audience watching this happen, I know I'm supposed to now relax, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't let go because I was waiting for that moment where they're going to be like, ah, I got you. We made you relax. Here, I'm going to stab you in the heart.
Yeah.
You know? So I couldn't thaw my cold, icy heart until like towards the end of that sequence. When they're like getting ready to like leave the water park or like that whole sequence is done, then I'm like, oh. And when my heart finally did thaw, I was like a puddle of goo. I was just like, I love them both so much. But whatever they were going for, it was great.
Yeah. So go see it now that we spoiled the crap out of it.
I think so. When it comes to spoiling movies, I don't necessarily watch movies for, like, the sixth sense. Like, I don't watch a movie just to get fooled or just to be surprised.
Yeah.
I watch a movie because I want to see the art of the movie being made. I want to see the acting. I want to see the wardrobe. I want to see the filmmaking itself. You know, like, those choices that were creatively made. So when someone tells me spoilers, like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really in it for that. I want to see the whole shebang.
Mm-hmm.
So like people can spoil the shit out of any movie they want. They're not going to give it justice. Like I still will see that movie and will still be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
And still be entertained. So.
And for me, I don't care about spoilers because I have ADHD. So for those that don't know, I have ADHD. So to me, it's like you can say whatever and then I'll forget about it before the movie starts. And usually if I actually want to see, like if there's a movie that I'm really into, I have to watch it three or four times before I actually think I get everything. Because I'll just be watching a movie and my brain wanders off and then I'll come back.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I'm like, wait, what happened?
Me too. The fishbowl thing happens to me where I just start wandering off. I'm like, oh, we're watching a movie.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. But this movie actually kept me pretty entertained. But
it wasn't overly complicated.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that was by design. It didn't – I mean, it's – no offense, Netflix. Like, but like
– I think because there was enough interesting little things like the Shining Girls and like the Exorcist and like all that stuff where it was just kind of like, oh, neat. Oh, neat. Like, there was enough to keep my brain engaged in it that my brain never, like, went and wandered off much.
It was a fast-paced movie as well.
Yeah.
Even though it had its natural ups and downs, it still, like, it pulled you along quickly enough to where you never felt like you were stagnant.
Yeah. There was no, like, lulls. Mm.
But I still, like, now that we've seen the whole thing and we know how all the characters interact and everything, I would still watch it again.
Oh, yeah. I totally
to go
watch
in and
it again.
See, you know, like, watching The Preacher and knowing what the preacher, what his motives actually are, and then, like, go back and see his interactions with people and everything like that. Like, it's just fun to rewatch a movie and be in on that little secret.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know something that the main character doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fun
and
little
then
thing.
It's always fun to see how the actor plays it, because, like, in the movie, the character doesn't know. But the actor knows because he's read the script. So then you're looking for like all these little nuances that maybe they're playing on and stuff like that. It's pretty fun. Like I like doing that.
It's fun like being, you know, as an actor, you look for those kind of things. Because you not only are letting yourself be sucked up in the story, you're also watching somebody work.
Yeah.
And when you're into that work, you know, you try to learn something from them, see how they do it. You know, try to put yourself in their shoes. Well, how would you have done it differently? Like, it goes on and on, especially if you're an actor, because it can, like, completely absorb your existence.
Yeah.
But, like, in movies like this where there's not – it's not overly complicated. You know, it's not this big epic cinema, because if it was, it wouldn't have been bought by Netflix. It would have been bought by a major studio.
Yeah.
Not to say that Netflix isn't, you know, becoming a major studio, because I kind of think it is. But anyway, that
aside –
one
of the biggest – or – Netflix may be the biggest studio, and at least as far as putting money into projects.
It is growing like crazy. Well, we were talking about, you know, the amount of jobs being produced by this online, you know, this internet-based production is incredible. I mean, but again, pros and cons, stuff gets, you know, falls through the cracks. But as far as like, you know, becoming disposable media, whereas like you could spend $12 million or, oh my God, that's probably a tiny amount of money now. Like hundreds of millions of dollars.
Let's say like Tusk, right? So Kevin Smith movie Tusk, which I actually loved.
I don't know
if you guys out there loved it, but I freaking loved it. That was like, I think it was like $32 million.
Okay.
And that is basically considered a small movie now.
Wow.
So
I guess like $12 million would be someone's salary to do that movie.
Yeah, that might be what Kevin Smith made. But basically the way that the studio sees it is that $32 million, no matter what happens, they're going to make that money back.
Yeah.
So even if it makes $10 million at the box office, then they're going to sell the rights to iTunes, right? To sell it on iTunes. And then they're going to, after like a week, they're going to sell it to Netflix to air on Netflix. And then there's like people that still buy DVDs are going to buy the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And there actually is a reason there's people still buy DVDs. So especially now with 4K becoming a thing, when you stream 4K, all right, so this is going to get a little technical, guys. So a 4K TV can run at, like, let's say 120 hertz, right? So that's 120 refreshes per second. So your TV is flickering 120 times every second and refreshing the screen. So basically what that does is it keeps things from blurring and it gives you a really, really crisp picture. Now, if you stream a 4K movie from iTunes or whatever, it's only going to run at 30 to 60 hertz. You're not going to get the full 120. So you're streaming 4K, so technically you're getting that 4K, but you're not getting, you're still not getting the best picture that your TV is capable of. Now, if you get a 4K player, like a DVD player that plays 4K movies, you can get that unencoded 120 hertz bit rate and you're going to get the best picture you can possibly get without any, you know, any slowing down of the frames and everything like that.
And you spend that kind of money on a TV,
you want to get the best picture possible. So there is still a reason to buy physical media. And on top of that, physical media you own. If you get on iTunes or you buy it through any other company, technically you're just leasing it.
You're borrowing it.
You're borrowing it, even though it says buy. Mm-hmm. So they can technically take it away anytime they want.
Yep.
You know, so, I mean, it all depends. For me, it doesn't matter. I don't care about picture quality. I mean, I think, at least for me, at the moment, there's nothing absolutely amazing, you know, as far as picture quality goes. Like, if I want to see something ridiculously awesome, I'll go to a movie theater.
Yeah. And we don't do that often. I know we're going to, you know, one of our, like, bizarro resolutions for 2018 is actually to see more films in the theater. But as far as, like, DVD goes, we don't have many.
No.
And it's because of the streaming content. But when it comes to streaming content, they have the advantage of they can show stuff that they have leased the rights to, and they can show stuff that they've produced in-house.
Yep.
So they have both. And it just makes the volume skyrocket.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it harder for the end user to, not necessarily harder for us to find what we're looking for, but it puts more responsibility on the people who make these lists and design these algorithms to choose what to show you.
Yeah.
And also, I'm sure it has to do with the amount of money that people have paid to be the first thing that you see when you do these kinds of searches. I'm sure it's complicated and boring.
Crazy thing.
But anyway, I'm glad that we found this particular flick.
And I hope everybody should go watch it.
Yeah.
So Little Evil on Netflix. I've drinking a lot of my beer, guys, and it's a 7.5 ABV. So
mine's gone.
Oh my God. All right. So we have a couple minutes left. So let's talk about something that we did. Speaking of acting and being actors and all that, we had the voice actor Christmas industry party
mm-hmm.
for, I guess, like Southern California.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. What do you think?
So this was hosted by VO Peeps. Ann Ganguza founded
VO Peeps. VO Peeps, SoCal Media, and SoCal Media Art Center.
That new one that's in...
In Brea.
In Brea.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a collaboration of everything. So VO Peeps tends to be focused more on the voice actor and like and voice director, booth director, that kind of thing. And the other one is a recording studio, correct? So he actually produces...
Well, the other company, so SoCal Media is like VO Peeps. So it's like a community... it's a community group where all these people who own smaller recording studios and are producers, it's like a group where they meet and network and get together on projects, basically. Mm-hmm. And then VO Peeps is kind of the same thing, but for the voice actor side.
Correct.
And then SoCal Media Arts is the actual building where we went, which is a new – well, the people running it have been in the industry for years, but this is a new business venture on their behalf that's like a mixed – it's a mixed media build unit, I guess. So they have a big green screen room where you can film stuff. They have a large recording studio where you can like record bands and things like that. And then they also have a smaller recording studio where it's like for voice acting and – vocals and stuff like that.
ADR.
Yeah. So it's a really cool place. Everything is like actually top beyond top of the line. So it's top of the line currently, plus they added in tech that's they're some of the only people that have tech like this.
You can tell the guy, his name's Christian, but I don't remember his last name.
No.
You can tell that a lot of thought went into like putting this thing together.
Like in the control rooms, they have this control room with like I don't even know, like 10 gigantic video monitors and this whole wall of like bank of crap that everything's wired to. But like they have this tech where they can literally like if somebody's in the vocal booth and the engineer running it is coming into a problem, let's say like something is coming in tinny or something and he can't figure out why it's coming in tinny, Christian can be anywhere in the world and log in to his iPad and actually change the settings that are on the engineer's board and the settings that are on this giant bank of like computers and all this stuff and work with him remotely.
The future is here.
And he offers that service to like, let's say there's a producer in New York that wants to record a cartoon at his studio. He can have that producer log in and actually work in his control room via remote, which is insane.
It's kind of, I mean, that's something that to be a sound engineer, you need to be in front of your board and you need to be able to hear everything live. You need to be able to be there. Like traditionally you need to be there.
Yeah.
But now he has the technology to, you know, have his headphones, you know, hopefully it's, you know, their top of the line as well. So he can hear actually what, you know, the end result should be. But he can manage all of that stuff remotely, similar to the way that back in the old days, voice actors had to go to a studio and everyone had to be in the same place because all the recording studio was – all the recording stuff was in that place and everyone just had to be there. Well, nowadays, you can connect through ISDN, which is an internet-based connection. So it's real time and it's very pure. The recording – quality that you do at your home is the same that it would be at that studio.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you can record from your home while a bunch of producers and directors and everybody is actually in a studio. But
or
now,
even talking remotely. Like it's
almost
like – but now
like, they can be talking
so
remotely.
So think about Skype. So it's like a really high-end Skype, right? So I'm in the I'm in our booth. I have the microphone in front of me. And then there's there's a director, a producer, an engineer, everybody, one can be in New York, one can be in LA, one can be in New Zealand for all we care. And they've all logged into the service and they're all hearing real time what I'm saying at the best, you know, at studio quality, what I'm saying in the microphone. And they can all talk to each other and they can talk to me and they can engineer and they can do everything that they need to do all completely remotely, and nobody has to even ever met anybody in person.
Now, that is within the confines of your equipment. So if you are – like our booth is set up pretty top-notch. I think the only thing that we could possibly upgrade is our interface. Right now it's the UR12. We could go up to UR22, but that's the UR22 is only good if you're using multiple channels anyway, and we're not, because we only do voice acting. So we only use the vocal channel anyway.
Yeah.
But like our equipment is legit, and like the next step up for us is in the thousands of dollars. So like we're pretty set for a while, but you can bet your ass that as soon as I can, I'm going to get a brand new microphone. Oh yeah. I know exactly.
Yeah. Like the next mic we get, like we already have a pretty top of the line mic.
We have a beautiful sounding setup right now.
But yeah.
But, you know.
Again, like if you went to the next level, it'd be $1,000 mic.
Exactly. Yeah. The jump in price
is insane.
But again, like the quality is great. So if you were recording on like, you know, on a Yeti or, you know, on a, you know, just some even simple like what we're using now are very like low end. They're great for what they are, but you couldn't do voice like record acting on these guys.
Podcasting, these mics are fine.
They're fine. They're a schmidge hollow. It's like whatever. You know what? They still sound pretty damn good for a podcasting mic.
Yeah.
So good job, little microphone. But whatever your quality, whatever your output is on your mics in your studio is what they're gonna hear on the other side. So, you know, if for whatever reason, if like Pongo's listening, I know Pongo's a voice actor.
Yeah.
Like if he's listening and he's got all this technical stuff going through his mind, like you want to sound the best in your own studio, because if you do connect via ISDN or over the internet, there's another method that you can do that's there's only
like
internet.
Source Connect.
That's the one, Source Connect.
There's ISDN, and then there's like one other company that has something similar. Mm-hmm.
But they're going to hear what you're producing out of your equipment. Yeah. So all the more reason to, you know, use a line of credit if you have to, but get the real shit in your studio as soon as you can.
Yes.
Because that's how you're going to.
And the great thing was, is like, I love our setup that we have. Like, it's really good. But then we went to this top of the line company, and they had the basically the same sized vocal booth that we have in our house. And the same exact foam products used to, like, you know, line everything. And we even got some tips on, like, how to – because our ceiling is bare right now because we haven't been able to figure out how we want to pad the ceiling. And we got some interesting ideas just being there and talking to Christian and the other guys, how we can – pad up the top of our ceiling the best way possible.
Another thing I think that they did that we didn't do because we haven't really needed to. There's let's talk voiceover for a little bit.
Yeah.
So when you're in your own recording studio, you have your acoustic treatment and then you have your sound blocking.
Yes.
So what we have right now is only acoustic treatment, and the only sound blocking is within the confines of the structure itself. So we live in an apartment. We're on the third floor, and our studio, our walk-in closet that we have converted into our recording studio, faces away from traffic. So we have a lot of things going for us as far as sound, potential sound pollution. Mm-hmm. So we did not need to install any sound barriers. And it's usually in like, what they call, is it loaded vinyl?
Yeah.
It comes in rolls and you can put it up on the wall before you put in your acoustic treatment.
It's basically like a roll of padding.
Well, it's thick. Like, it's like, it looks like vinyl flooring, but it's thick. It's like 5 millimeters or something.
Six. I think it weighs a ton. Up to 10.
Depending on what your needs are.
Yeah.
So because our needs weren't that, you know, bad as far as sound control, like if this was like multiple suites within a warehouse, yes, you would definitely install that. It's basically making sure that your space that you're recording in is soundproof.
Yes.
But we don't have to do that. We only need to do what's called acoustic treatment, which means the sound that you make when you're in that booth. So not worrying about what's on the outside of the booth, but what's on inside the booth.
So you want to get rid of any echoing and
right. So like if you think about if you were to walk into your bathroom and start like just use your iPhone or whatever and just start recording, it's going to sound really tinny. It's going to sound really hollow, probably a little bit brassy. And what you're hearing is your own voice bouncing off the walls and the mirror and the floor and the ceiling and all that shenanigans and then being picked up by your microphone. So your end result is going to be a little messy. But if you go into an acoustically appropriate room, your voice is going to bounce off of whatever material is on the wall and then kind of dissipate. And mm-hmm. it's going to kind of bounce within itself, but it won't make its way back to the microphone.
Yeah.
So when you get bizarre recordings or it sounds a little hollow or you want to make, you know, the sound, the space sounds really big instead of it sounding like you're speaking to someone next to you, it's probably because you're getting that bizarre bounce back. So what we have set up is we have a mix of pyramid tile and just that straight whatever the other thing
groove?
Is.
I don't remember what they call it.
But instead of like little pyramids, it's like straight lines of little triangles. We've got a mix of those in our studio and it works great. Like I'm actually really impressed with, we even have some bare wall showing on the ceiling.
Yeah.
So our ceiling isn't fixed and we have carpet on the floor. Other than that, every single surface is covered with some kind of foam and there's no tinny reverb or anything. There's like no bounce back at all. Mm-hmm. What were we talking? We were talking about the Christmas party.
Oh, yeah. We really got off topic.
Whoa. Okay. Well, I'm going to blame Cellar Blender.
I still haven't even finished mine.
Oh, my God. I did.
We're over an hour. So.
Oh, no.
I hope you guys enjoyed that complete ramble of random shit we talked about.
This is our livelihood. That's our jobs. Like, we're into it.
Yeah.
Voice acting is really important to us.
Let's do this. So, tomorrow we need to do some recording,
which
is actually the day that this podcast comes out.
Ooh.
So maybe what we'll do is we'll do Facebook Live while we do some recording. So if you're listening to this in the morning and you're following us on Facebook, we'll do a Facebook Live of us doing some vocal stuff in the recording booth.
We will not have been drinking at that point.
No.
So there is a very distinct difference between podcasting and voice acting. So when we're podcasting, we're having a conversation, we're drinking, we're chatting it up. You know, we'll maybe drop an F-bomb here or there.
These rules don't apply to the guy who plays Rick on Rick and Morty.
Correct.
He's
he'll do
that
stuff.
He's a method actor. He drinks his brains out to play that character.
He earned it, though. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love his other work, too, besides Rick and Morty. Anyway, but, like, as a voice actor, we are stone sober. We have, you know, prepped. We're, like, eating the right thing. We've, you know, warmed up our voices. Like, it gets really technical and weird and then, yeah. Like, almost cult-like kind of thing. But we'll kind of let you into that world and show you guys what we do when we're working in front of the microphone as opposed to having a conversation in front of the microphone.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah, definitely two different things. So yeah, now that we've like completely rambled off topic in every sense of the word, is there anything else that we needed to address this time around?
You can be sure to follow us on Facebook if you want to see some recording.
Tales from the Fog.
On Tales from the Fog. You can follow us on Instagram at Tales from the Fog. Mm-hmm. You can follow Veronica at
Veronica Voices.
And I think that's it.
There's a new, I posted a video update of the handstand challenge.
Oh, right. We only have 5 days left of this 28-day.
There's only 5 days left?
Handstand challenge. Yeah, 5 days.
Oh, my God.
And it sucks, guys. Handstands suck.
Although, kind of awesome and totally by accident, I broke the 2-minute mark today.
Yeah.
I did not know that was going to happen. I must have been zenning out pretty hard on that last one. So have we talked about the handstand challenge before?
Not on the podcast, no.
Okay, quick recap. The 28-day handstand challenge is a personal betterment challenge where you're supposed to stand up against a wall and do a handstand. And you can either be like, have your butt against the wall and then put your hands on the floor and like walk your legs up the wall. Or you can be facing the wall, put your hands on the floor and kick up like you're going to do a walkover and then just like smack your butt against the wall and then hold up that way.
Yeah.
Either way, you're supposed to do a handstand against the wall and for as long as you possibly can up until 60 seconds. 60 seconds is the goal, which implies that 60 seconds is really freaking hard to get to.
Yes.
And I agree. So what you do is once you get to 60 seconds, you do your first attempt, however long it is, you take a minute break, do your second attempt, one more minute break, and then your third attempt, and then you're done. You don't have to do it anymore for the rest of the day.
Yep.
And you progress until you get up to 60. Well, because thanks to Decade Brigade and stunt training and all that shenanigans, I was a little bit ahead of the curve strength-wise. So I got to 60 on day two. And I wanted to keep at that for a while. So I did that for 2 weeks. And then I'm like, well, they did talk about possibly pushing to 90, so let me see if I can get to 90. And so I pushed it, instead of going to 60 seconds, I did it to 90 seconds. And then I started to hit 90 seconds on attempt 1, 2, and 3. And it's been like that for about a week and a half. Maybe a little over a week.
Yeah.
And today on attempt 3, for whatever reason, like I was doing this Zen breathing or something, but like I was in the zone and I didn't realize how much time had passed. And I had surpassed my 90 seconds. And usually when I push past 90, I get to like 100 seconds or like 110, I think was my max. Mm-hmm. And this time I got to 2 minutes, 120 seconds. And I did not think ever in this challenge that I would get to 2 minutes handstanding against the wall.
I'm just happy if I hit 60.
But like you're getting so much stronger.
I've only hit 60 five or six times maybe.
Xander's done it once. Yeah. But he doesn't do it as often as he wants to because half the time he's at his dad's house anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, hard work does pay off in a big way. Except my physical therapist, the massage therapist at the chiropractor is like, why are your back muscles so inflamed? I'm like, no reason. Don't worry about it.
All right.
Anyway. So that was the other
handstand update. Challenge. If you want to do it.
Oh, yeah. So that was on Veronica Voices on Instagram. I'm pretty sure it's Veronica Voices on any social media platform is where you can catch my stupid stuff.
We don't really do Twitters, but if you
My Instagram posts to Twitter.
Then it just like goes, it's just posts from other stuff. We don't post directly on Twitter.
But yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff coming up in towards the end of December, starting in January.
Oh, so we didn't even talk about news at the top. So we'll talk about news at the overtime.
Maybe we'll edit it down.
Overtime news? All right, overtime news, guys. 17th Door is doing a holiday haunted attraction. It's, hold on, let me look up the dates really quick.
So in the past, Sinister Point has been the one to open during Halloween time, and they're doing a one-time event as opposed to opening their haunt for multiple weekends or multiple engagements. So this time, 17th Door is opening their doors, all 17 of them, to do a thing.
Oh my God, for the love of God. Okay. So it is four nights only, December 8th, 9th, 15th, and 16th. So that starts this weekend.
Oh, cool.
And it is it's kind of like a – it's like the 17th door where you have to go through the different rooms and like withstand some kind of shenanigans. Mm-hmm. But the idea is you win or lose as a group. So as a group, you have to complete these challenges or finish these puzzles or do these things. And if everybody in the group does it, or if as a group you're able to finish something, everybody gets a little prize, like a gift box. And I think you have to earn a certain amount of gift boxes by the end. And if you earn enough, you get on the nice list and actually win a real prize.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so there's something at stake, so go with people that aren't chickens.
and we'll who are anything. Smart.
Yes. And it is listed in the description that there is, quote-unquote, treats that have to be eaten.
Oh.
So, you know, take Why? That as it is. It's Why the 17th door, so I'm guessing cockroaches or crickets or something.
They get so close to a palpable event, and then they gotta make it gross. Why do they gotta make it gross?
Well, just because it's not for you doesn't mean it's not for other people, right?
I understand that. But this is from my perspective, and I don't like that shit.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, some people are into that, and that's cool.
And then if you like partying, Sinister Point is doing some kind of holiday party.
That's all I know about it.
That's all we know about it. Some kind of holiday party. You can check it out on sinisterpoint.com, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then for 17th Thor, you can go to 17ththor.com.
Or just Google. Google anything.
Or just Google. Or if you're on Facebook, look up their Facebook pages.
Yeah.
It has all the info and the events and all that stuff.
What do you think? We know everything about everything?
Jeez. I know, right, guys? Jeez, come on. All right. We got to get out of here.
All right. Well, thanks for sticking around this long, you guys.
Yeah. It's a whole lot of rambly crap.
That's the beer's fault.
I picked a good one for the night.
Well done.
All right, guys. Let's get out of there. What's the sign off? You do the sign off.
Until next time, we'll see you in the fog.
Bye, guys.